We now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps, as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
Many people have seen ghosts and reported incredible experiences from the realm of the spirit world. Who can tell what this young man will see as he falls deep into a trance?
How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on After Dark Radio. It is Friday night, March 13, 2015. Here on After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Radio Network, we've got quite a show for you here tonight. What a show we've got tonight. Christine Parker is going to be joining us on the program. She is the author of the book, 100 Bigfoot Nights. Also, the website, 100bigfootnights.com, 100bigfootnights.com. And she lives in a house, and next door, shouldn't say next door, I guess across the street. I'll give you a capsule version of this right here, and then she's going to tell us the whole story later on. She lives in a house in a somewhat residential neighborhood, and across the street are the woods. And the woods go very, very deep. And something, she says, is in there. And it has been making her life and her family's life miserable. Neighbors are aware of this. And if you want to check out the website, 100bigfootnights.com, she doesn't only have a book telling the story, but she's got this website which has her evidence. There is audio. There is video. There are the sounds that she has recorded out of this forest in the middle of the night. And we're going to talk to her about all of those things here on the program today. And we will play you some of those sounds if you have not heard them yet. Christine Parker is going to be on the show. 100 Bigfoot Nights is the name of the book. It is the name of the website. So head up there and check that out. She's got a very, very interesting story. I will tell you right now that there's a lot of stuff on her website. There are a lot of sounds. There's some interesting videos and photos. And she has a lot to say about this. In her opinion, it's not just Bigfoot out there, but also dogmen. And I had a lot to ask her about. We had an hour to do this interview. It was taped earlier today. And suffice to say, when the interview was over, I was already looking to get her on the show again to talk more. Barely even was able to scratch the surface of everything that has gone down in her life. And the story here, 100 Bigfoot Nights. It's going to be a very, very interesting interview. All of you interested in Bigfoot, I strongly recommend you check out the interview with Christine Parker, which is coming up in about 30 minutes here on this program. As always, we've got a lot of news to talk about today. We're going to kick it off with open lines here on the program. I want to direct everybody very quickly to AfterDarkRadioShow.com. That is the website address, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Everything you need if you want to follow this program is up there. We've got the phone numbers, the email addresses, the Twitter handle, and if you head up there right now, you can download last week's show. Robin Bellamy was on the show. She talked the Tina Resch case. She talked about Mothman and so much more. That show is available right now at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Now, after this show is over, this show that you're listening to right now is going to replace that one. So I do recommend, if you have any interest in that show with Robin Bellamy, you better go up there right now and grab it, because it's only going to be there for another 1 hour and 55 minutes, after which it is gone. And the only way that you'll be able to listen to it is if you're a subscriber to our main website, WrestlingObserver.com. But you can get it free right now. So head up there and check that out. The March 6th show, Robin Bellamy talking Tina Resch, Mothman, and more. If you want to contact the show tonight, here's how you do it. Open line phone calls. Going to kick off in just a moment. Three lines available for you tonight. Essentially, you dial a number. It'll ring and ring and ring and ring. You may or may not. I may pick up and you may hear the show for a while. We got one caller on the line. He's listening right now. And if that's the case, hang out. And when I say you're on the air, you're on the air. Sometimes it'll just ring and ring and ring and I'll pick up and you're on the air. We have no call screener. Just like the old days of Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM, unscreened open lines. So keep trying if you want to get on the program. Eventually, hopefully, you will get through. Toll free, it is 855-478-4478. That is the main toll-free number, free, in the United States and Canada, 855-478-4478. I pay for you to call us on that number. West of the Rockies, if you have free long distance, 425-488-0525 is the phone number. And east of the Rockies is 425-482-1686. If you would like to email me, the email address is brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. That is brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. You can check that out. Email me. I'll read as many emails as I can get to on the program here tonight. Twitter, I am at Brian Alvarez. That's easy. We just passed 20,000 Twitter followers. So if you want to join the fun, make sure you head up there and check out at Brian Alvarez on Twitter. I post all sorts of stuff, photos, etc. And the Facebook page, which is run by our current producer, Andrew Lutsky, facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow. Now, on the website right now, it states guest booking contact producer Garrett. Please don't contact producer Garrett at this moment. He is on a hiatus, recently had a child. If you would like to be a guest on this program or you have a guest request, go to the Facebook page and drop us a line at facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow, and we will work on getting your request granted. Andrew has done a great job getting guests for this program. Tons of guests coming up over the next several months already booked. It's going to be a very good time. So contact us here tonight. Phone, email, Twitter, however you want to get a hold of us. The floor is yours. And with that, let's go to the phones. You are on the air tonight on After Dark Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Ryan from Cumberland.
Ryan from Cumberland. What's going on?
I just experienced some tragedy tonight and wanted to tell you about it.
Oh, no. I hope it's not too tragic.
Oh, it's stuff, so.
What happened?
Happened was, it started out, I went to a wrestling show, and after the wrestling show, I went in, I do something called chicky singing, which is serenading girls.
Chicky singing?
Right.
Okay.
And the girl I sang to was someone you might know. She's a famous wrestler named Casey Carlisle, one of the longest reigning NWA Women's Champions of the modern era.
Sure.
And after I got home, I found out the original chicky singer had passed away.
Really? The original chicky singer.
Right. He used to come into my office and sing to all the girls. He wouldn't sing to the guys, but he would sing to all the female co-workers.
So his name was not Chicky Singer, but he was the original Chicky Singer.
No, he was Stan.
Stan. Well, that's too bad, Ryan. I'm sorry to hear that.
And actually, it's one of my best friend's father, so it makes it even more tragic.
I hope there's not a tie-in here tonight to Brian Ladd.
There was a Brian Ladd story I had for you tonight, but it's not related to this.
Hmm. Well, I'm very sorry to hear that. I'm very sad for you and his family.
Yeah, I plan to go to the viewing, hopefully, if I can make it.
So what's the latest with Brian Ladd?
I think I might work with him, but I'm not sure.
You might work with him?
Well, something very bizarre happened today that makes me think that maybe this is all a practical joke.
Huh. What happened?
Well, what happened was, there's this girl I work with at work, and we both left at the same time today at work. And as I was coming home, this girl I noticed was right behind me. Like, she literally, you know, parked in my parking lot at home. I thought this was very bizarre.
She followed you home.
Yes, she did, but the boss told her to because she had an errand to run.
Okay.
But what makes this weird is there's this guy at work that said that she would do this to me about a year ago. He said this.
He predicted that she would follow you home and park in your parking spot.
Well, he predicted that she would stalk me home is what he said, and she got very upset at this when he said it.
And now a year later, she has stalked you home?
Yeah, and she didn't even know where I lived, or she did it by accident. And I could tell she was very embarrassed by it because she ran back to her car very fast, you know, when I told her to have a good weekend. So obviously, you know, it was quite embarrassing for her.
This is very, very strange, Ryan. Why did she stalk you? Your boss sent her to your house for some reason?
I guess to deliver an errand to one of my neighbors, but that doesn't make a lot of sense. Why wouldn't he just give it to me to deliver?
Sure. Sounds like she may have been stalking you, and she was found out, and now she's embarrassed. It's going to lead to some very awkward... this Monday, it's going to be very awkward, Ryan, I'm afraid.
Yeah, actually, I work in a couple hours, but she doesn't work on Saturdays.
Well, that's lucky. So you think that your coworker may be a Brian Ladd?
Well, this guy is very bizarre. Like, he's like one of the most bizarre people I know at work. He probably is the most bizarre person I know at work.
Does he normally make predictions for people at your work?
This is the first time I've noticed. So, you know, it's just funny that when I went to Berkeley Springs, no one knew who Brian Ladd was. The closest I came up with was Brian Lapp. He spent a lot of time in the mental hospital, which is very similar to Brian Ladd, but a different name. And you got to realize Berkeley Springs is a very small town of about 1,000 people, so that was pretty odd when they told me that.
Well, listen, Ryan, what I want you to do, because of all these weird coincidences in your life, I want to thank you very much for the call, is I need you to investigate the 11-11 phenomenon. And be careful, however, because I have a feeling that this 11-11 phenomenon may just take over your life as Brian Ladd has. If you want to give us a call, everybody, 855-478-4478 is the phone number. Whatever's on your mind, open lines here tonight. You know what? If you got a Bigfoot story, I'd really like to hear from you since that is the topic of the interview tonight with Christine Parker, who's coming up in about 20, 25 minutes here, talking her book and website, 100 Bigfoot Nights. I should note, by the way, that daylight savings time has sprung upon us. Unless you're our illustrious webmaster, Keith Rowland. It did not spring upon him. But it did spring upon me here in Seattle. And it is, I consider it a holiday, spring forward, when I get an extra hour of light in the evening. I don't get up early in the morning. I stay up late at night. And so to get an extra hour of sunlight in the evening, I love it. I love daylight savings time. But, of course, my phone and my computer, these all automatically adjust, so it's not a big deal. But I still have the microwave downstairs and the oven, and there's a clock on both of them. And these clocks need to be manually adjusted. So I went down on Sunday morning to adjust the clocks, and show enough, 11-11 on both of them. And I couldn't help but think, how about that? 11-11. Isn't that strange? All right, we've got a lot of different articles here to talk about. I did just get a note that the TuneIn radio stream died mid-call with Ryan, so I'm hoping we are still connected here. Looks like we are. Maybe try reconnecting. Oh, I've just been told we're back. I don't know what happened there, but apparently we lost the stream momentarily. We are back. And anyway, I will have a full audio recording. If you missed any of Ryan's call, fear not. It is all recorded on my end, and I will get that up for everybody after the show here tonight. Josh here says, I'm trying to picture my body with my dog's head on it. Is that what a dog man is? You know what's funny? this Dogmen thing. Christine is going to explain the Dogmen to everybody. I asked her, you know, what is it? What is because I'm not going to try to spoil any of the interview for everybody, but I will say that she saw a Bigfoot that she said looked more like an animal than what you would traditionally think a Bigfoot would look like. And when she explained it, it seemed to me that this would be what you would consider a dog man. And I asked her, was this a dog man? And she said, no, the dog man has ears. It sticks straight up. This is a preview of what you're getting tonight during the interview, by the way. And unfortunately, we ran out of time, but I really did want to ask her, and I hope I don't forget the next time she's on. I want to know how her dogs reacted to the dog men. I should have just let it go long and asked the question anyway, because this is intriguing to me. What do dogs think of dog men? I bring this up because I was reading an article today about animals, and we have three cats, and one of my cats is just, it's so in love with my wife, and it sits on her shoulders, it kneads, it cries, and it essentially behaves like my wife is the cat's mother. And we've always wondered about this. Like, what do your cats think of you? Does your cat see you as a separate species? Or does your cat see you as just a big, clumsy cat? And so I Googled this. And obviously, we don't really know because we can't read a cat's mind. We can't communicate with the cats. But I did see an article, and it noted that dogs, which I found very interesting, I don't have dogs, but the way that dogs behave with other dogs is different than the way that dogs act around humans. When a human comes by, a dog will act a certain way with a human, and it will act a different way with another dog. And so the conclusion that scientists who are apparently paid to study this sort of thing is that dogs see us as being different from them. Cats, on the other hand, when you see how cats play with other cats and with their mothers and the way that they behave with cats as compared to humans, it's not different. Cats relate to humans in much the same way that cats relate to other cats, unlike dogs. And so while we cannot read a cat's mind or a dog's mind, the conclusion is that dogs see us as something different, and cats see us, humans, as being just big cats. Which, of course, begs the question, I fell down the stairs a couple of weeks ago like an idiot. Do cats see us as big, dumb, clumsy cats? And this seems to be a question that a human cannot answer because, again, we can't read cats' minds. But apparently, again, looking at how cats respond to other cats, and I did not know this, when your cat comes up and headbutts you and rubs against you and such, cats don't do this with cats that they believe to be inferior to them. Which begs the question, how do people know what cats other cats deem inferior? I think I know because I have three cats, and one of them is a boy, and he's the youngest one, and he's clearly the dumbest, and the other two cats want nothing to do with him, and they never rub their heads on him. So I do believe that they see him as an inferior cat. There's a point to all of this, by the way. So because cats rub their heads on you, they don't see you as an inferior cat, even though you're clumsy. You're just a big mama cat or a big daddy cat, whatever. So to bring this all full circle, if your cat sees you as just a big cat, but your dog sees you, a human being, as a separate species, how would your dog relate to a dog man? Would it see a dog man as another species? Or would it see a dog man as just another dog who happens to be bipedal? I don't know the answer, but the next time Christine Parker is on the show, I've got to ask her this question because I don't know the answer. But she does have an hour of things to talk about, and we are going to get into that here in a few minutes. If you want to give us a call, 855-478-4478 is the phone number. You can drop us emails as well. brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. I do have an email here. This is based on something that I was talking about last week. That being, could you ship yourself in a box? If, for example, I wanted to get to Hawaii, I mean, could I put myself in a box and apply enough postage and perhaps save a little money and mail myself to Hawaii? Eric here says, Brian, I work in a shipping delivery place. We are a Midwest company, pretty much an AWA version of UPS, and I would suggest not shipping yourself or anyone through any delivery company. Based on how my coworkers and I stack and some of the chemicals which we ship, I would not suggest shipping yourself. Stacks fall over in trailers, and people aren't the nicest when they unload trailers. So I guess he's saying, even if you made it, them throwing you into the back of a truck and tossing you around and various chemicals that could spill and eradicate you and then being tossed out of it, just be a uncomfortable. You don't know turbulence, apparently, until you've shipped yourself to another location. On the topic of Bigfoot, an article was brought to my attention recently. This is up at doubtfulnews.com. If you want to check it out, I saw this link on the Anomalist website. And in fact, let me read you what the Anomalist has to say about it, and then I'm going to read you a little bit more from the other deal. This is extremely interesting. There's a lot of people that go out and they look for Bigfoot. We have the Finding Bigfoot television show. A lot of comedy, a lot of goofiness. I shall read this from the Anomalist. 4-year Bigfoot research project in Oklahoma yields intriguing and unexplained results. It says here, this comprehensive breakdown of the North American Wood Ape Conservancy's project, the Ouachita Project, I believe is how it's pronounced, is a must-read from a surprising source, Doubtful News. While the consensus isn't all that doubtful at all, it still injects a healthy bit of skepticism into interpreting the results, in which countless experiments and encounters are detailed, from rock throwing to tree knocking to sightings and an actual shooting and wounding of a Bigfoot, apparently. Doubtful News, and keep in mind, this is Doubtful News, says this project deserves a, quote, higher level of attention than most studies of its kind. They also note a strange similarity that we too have noticed in multiple Bigfoot reports. And by the way, we didn't get a chance to talk about this with Christine Parker, but what I'm about to read right here also relates to what she writes about in 100 Bigfoot Nights. The tree knocking and the rock throwing is very much like documented poltergeist activity. So take a few minutes out of your day, sit back and relax, and read through this article and every link provided within it, and you will not be disappointed. So this is up at the Anomalist. You can go up there and click the link. It will take you to Doubtful News. And I'm going to read part of this here. It says, there is a study that is put together by the North American Wood Ape Conservancy. They're not calling it Bigfoot. They're calling it a wood ape. They have published a detailed report of a 4-year research project. The investigations conducted over the course of 4 years range from 60 to 120 days in duration and produced experiences, evidence, and information thought to be significant, though not definitive, to the point of validating the existence of a native North American anthropoid species, an ape. Some of the more notable thoughts and impressions recorded by scores of North American Wood Ape Conservancy team members are described and discussed in this monograph. And there is a link to the monograph, which you can check out, which is, there's a lot of information here. There is a detailed report. There is a frequently asked questions area. There is a video showing you the denseness of the area, and there are 14 audio clips, including huffs. Then a rock is thrown onto the cabin and rolls around. Huffs, and then a rock hits the cabin. More huffing before a rock slams the cabin. All the way up to a recording from the North American Wood Ape Conservancy field audio of what could be faux speech of a Sasquatch. What else did they get? It says here, not a specimen, although they were prepared to take one down and did shoot and apparently hit one. No photographs. They had problems with trail cameras, as usual. Ruined by bears and when secured, the devices were noticeable on the trails and too conspicuous around the cabins. However, in the report, you will find documented the following. Over 1,000 rock-throwing incidents. Wood knocking, sometimes rhythmic, responsive, or mimicking. Metallic noise. That also is very interesting. Again, we're not going to have time to talk to Christine about this since she has so much else to talk about, but she does have a very weird recording that she made in the woods, which you can see at 100bigfootnights.com, of, I think what she describes it as is working, where all night long you hear a weird metallic clanging coming out of the woods. It is the weirdest audio. I don't know what it is, but again, apparently the North American Wood Ape Conservancy documented something similar, a metallic noise, use of rocks or hard objects on metallic objects. This is something I need to do a whole show about because this is fascinating. Also, sounds of movement through vegetation, bipedal footfalls, banging on the structure walls during the night, footprints, a strong smell, a musky, wet horse scent, damaged trees. We're talking falled dead trees, broken dead or green limbs beyond natural breakage, vocalizations, huffs, grunts, whistles, growls, screams, and chattering, indeterminate hair and blood samples, signatures from thermal cameras, reports of eye shine, brief sightings of reddish-brown to black various-sized animals, and one occasion of physical intrusion into a window. The group suggests in their hypothesis that an undocumented anthropoid is native to this remote area, which they call Area X, in order to not reveal its location. It's on private land. They surmise the creature primarily is bipedal and exists in social groups. They've adapted to be stealthy and avoid being in direct line of sight. Again, they believe this is some sort of ape. And DoubtfulNews.com says, I strongly urge you to read the report. Notice there is no hoaxing that is evident. This project is a result of a considerable time and effort. I went on a Bigfoot expedition. It was 3 days long. These people spent 12,000 hours investigating, dozens of participants. They do not appear to have faked or exaggerated the evidence. They admit where they made mistakes and where things did not work, and they understand the evidence presented is not definitive, but they hope the documentation of their observations spurs a closer look by scientists. So this is all up at, well, this article here is at DoubtfulNews.com, but you can see a link, and there are several updates here, including links to other websites that are looking at this. There's a photograph here, by the way, of blood spatters on a rock that apparently they took in for an investigation, but the test results were not conclusive, inconclusive results. And they're not sure why they were inconclusive, by the way. It says there could be many reasons, degradation from the environment, lab didn't take it seriously enough, but they did in fact have some samples here that they attempted to get tested. So there is a individual here, Brian Brown. He is a member of the North American Wood Ape Conservancy. And hopefully at some point, maybe I can get him on this show and we can talk about what apparently is a very, very interesting report, which you can link up to at the DoubtfulNews.com website. And as noted, they've got a link to this Ouachita Project monograph, which is everything, I guess, that you can get methodology, projects, research. And indeed, as noted here at the bottom, you can get a recording from NAWAC Field Audio of what could be faux speech. I hesitate to try to open this, but I'm going to give it a shot here live on the air. You never know what's going to happen when I click a link live on the air, but let's try this here. That's pretty creepy. Let me play the very beginning again, because that was, I think, the best stuff, and I was turning the volume up. Let's try it again. That was a very disconcerting moan. One more time. And then here is the speech at the end. So there you go. There have been many people who claim that when they have heard what they believe to be Sasquatch, they have used the term samurai speech, samurai chatter, which was in fact what that sounded like there at the end. This audio clip, as well as a number of others, is available at woodape.org. I guess that is the website. If you want to head up there right now and check that out, or preferably, of course, after the show, you can head up there to woodape.com. And by the way, I just got a really interesting tweet from Kirk here, who says, that recording is creeping my cat out. I mentioned this before, but I have three cats, and they're always in the living room. I watch TV all of the time. And they never pay attention. Occasionally, when I'm watching something like on the Discovery Channel or something, if there are a bunch of birds on the screen, they'll pay attention to the birds for a brief period of time. But largely, they do not pay one bit of attention to the show. There have been times when I've been watching Finding Bigfoot, when they think they got some sort of weird howl, or sometimes when I'm watching some other show and they play some recordings that they claim to be of Bigfoot, my cats respond to this, and they don't like the sound. I don't know what it means. I don't know. I don't take that as any evidence of any sort, but it is weird that they don't like that sound. And apparently, Kirk here has got some cats that did not like that recording one bit, and I don't blame them. Empress Cortana here also says, yes, our cats see us as bigger cats as well. Cats also meow only to communicate to humans. Cats do, in fact, communicate with each other via meows in the wild. But what did I read? It was something like, when cats are little, they will meow at their mothers. But once they grow up, they don't meow anymore. So the fact that your cat meows at you indicates that it thinks you're its mother. So there you go. Take care of your cats, everybody. They think you're nothing but a big, clumsy cat, but they still respect you. You're not a lesser cat, apparently. Unless the cat doesn't pay any attention to you, in which case, I guess that cat does find you to be a lesser cat. If you want to drop us a line, once again, 855-478-4478 is the phone number and the email address, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. In a couple of minutes, Christine Parker will be on the show talking her book and website, 100 Bigfoot Nights. It's coming up here in just a moment. Got an email here. This is from Phoenix Rises. And by the way, I've gotten a request here to play that recording one more time. Perhaps I will do that here in just a moment. But let me read this first. Brian, this is Josh/Phoenix20191 from the board. Checking in again. Seeing as your show tonight is about Bigfoot, I'd like to send you this email detailing my personal views on Bigfoot. First off, the one thing I have kept with me is if I or anyone else is camping and they begin to hear knocks that sound more like someone knocking on a tree than a woodpecker or any other animal. It may be time to leave, as many who study Bigfoot believe that that is actually Bigfoot making a tactical move to alert another Bigfoot they are closing in on possible prey, or it may be a way of communicating to see if there is a danger present. Personally, I do not know if Bigfoot exists, but I do think there may be something out there we don't know about. The thing that strikes me about the infamous Dennis Martin case is the information I believe David Politis did not go over, which was before the Green Berets arrived there, a couple who had no clue Dennis was missing noticed what looked like a very large man walking in the woods holding what appeared to be a large bag, possibly a person. And as they went in the woods with this bag-looking object, a howl emerged from where the being went. Besides all of this, I really would like to hear your thoughts on the Noreen Gotch story and that of Patrick F. Carnes, both un-Bigfoot-related. I will have to check on both of those stories. I got to, I guess, check out that Dennis Martin story as well. David Politis has got some very interesting and very, very scary stories about people disappearing in national forests. We had him on the show a couple of months ago, actually. If you're a subscriber at WrestlingObserver.com, you can go into the archives and type in David Politis in the search area. P-A-U-L-I-D-I-E-S, I believe is how you pronounce it. And listen to that show, and it will freak you out, trust me. So we'll have him back on the show, hopefully, at some point as well. I'm being bombarded with Twitter here. Our Siamese always watches TV. She's asleep. She didn't react to the sound. Maybe when you play it again, it will. And Josh here says, can you please play that Bigfoot chatter one more time? It was super freaky. All right, everybody, I'm going to play it again. So get ready. I'm going to cue this whole thing up. Audio is all the way up. If you've got cats in the room, I want you to wake them up. And I want you to alert me as to how they react when they hear this howl. It starts with a howl, and then at the end of the recording, you hear some chatter. So here we go. All right, one more time. I'm going to do just the howl and just the chatter. So here we go. Here's the howl. I don't like that one at all. And here is the chatter. There you go. You want to hear more, everybody? There's a lot of clips up right now at woodape.org. Head up there and check that out. Are you interested in this Bigfoot topic? If so, it's your lucky day. We're about to be joined by Christine Parker. She is the author of 100 Bigfoot Nights, which is available up at Amazon.com. You can check it out on your Kindle. Two books so far. I believe she's working on a third, and she documents everything that is going on in and around her neighborhood. It is a fascinating story. We're going to go about an hour and 10 minutes or so here talking to her about everything that's going down there. You're going to hear some amazing stories. And as noted, we barely scratched the surface here. So if you want more, I recommend going up to 100bigfootnights.com. She's got a lot of audio up there. We're going to play some of it during the interview here tonight. If you want more, I recommend going up to her website and checking it out. But it's an interesting story here, everybody. So stand by. We'll be back in just a moment. Christine Parker here on After Dark Radio talking Bigfoot and more here on After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network. We're back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here. After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Very happy today to be joined by Christine Parker, the author of 100 Bigfoot Nights, which is the original book on Amazon.com. Now, there is a second book out. I believe a third is in the works. Very strange things going on in and around Christine's house and neighborhood. And Christine, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. We have a million things to talk about here. I would like to direct everybody before we begin to 100bigfootnights.com, which is the website, obviously. And there's a lot of stuff up there that we're going to be talking about here in addition to the book tonight. There are a whole bunch of audio clips. There are videos. We're going to be playing some of the audio clips tonight. If you want to hear some of the other interviews that Christine has done, those are up there at 100bigfootnights.com as well. And I guess to kick it all off here, Christine, because there's a million things to wade through here on the website, let's get a capsule view of the story, 100 Bigfoot Nights. This began just a couple of years ago. Very strange things happening in and around your home.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. October 13th, 2012 was the day that we heard a sound, and it was howling from the forest. We didn't know it at the time what it was. We were just setting up our Halloween decorations, and well, actually my husband was doing that, and he was outside late at night adjusting the main spotlight when he heard a sound coming from the forest, and it was real loud, and it was engulfing it, and he didn't know what it was. He couldn't identify the sound, and he got nervous and came back in the house and got me to go out there and hear it. And at first, I didn't want to go because it was cold. You know, that was the last thing I wanted to do. But then I went outside, and I also heard it, and he had brought his pistol with him. He locked and loaded it before we left the house, and it was a sound I, too, had never heard before. And it was so loud that it was engulfing everything. And we were both perplexed as to what could have done it. And we searched for the creature that night. We didn't know it was a creature. We thought it was just an injured animal in the forest. We just knew something was wrong. And that's when it all began. And from that point forward, it's just been a nightmare for us. It went from us discovering what it was that was howling to investigating, contacting an expert in the field, you know, filling out a report online, and then having an expert come out and a person who investigates them. And then it went from there. And what we did and how it escalated to the point that we were basically under siege in our home. And all the things that they did, what happened, and I was upset and terrified. To this day, I'm terrified every time the sun goes down. But we started to record them, and I started to shoot video of the forest and shoot photographs and basically document everything as it happened, as it occurred, and what was happening to us. And our lives went from being normal, like everybody else's life, you know, with your regular problems in everyday life, to being I can't even explain it, to where we were just sitting up night after night after night, no longer sleeping, monitoring the forest, monitoring it and trying to protect our family from these things, as it just kept escalating and escalating and escalating. And that's what the books talk about, or that's the story. And through our efforts of trying to, of us documenting everything, I was able to, you know, get the recordings and the videos and stuff in order to put them on the website for people to hear, you know, so they can hear what we're going through. They can hear what we hear. When we hear something, like when it goes up and down the street and says, you know, "Mommy, come here, eat," when they're asking for food or they're doing things, we record it, and then I posted it so that people can actually try to live a day in our lives, you know, try to understand what we're going through since we discovered them.
Now, the website, obviously, is a collection of photos, videos, sounds. The book itself is written sort of like a novel. You kind of tell the story as if you're writing a novel, but you've added everything on the website, as a way to show people that this sounds like I'm just telling a story, but here is all of the evidence that we have accrued over the years of all of these things that we write about in the book.
Right. That's what it is. If you, the books are happening, I'm writing the books as it's happening and trying to go through the events, dates, times, events, and what we feel about it and what we're, you know, what we're going through emotionally or what I'm emotionally going through. The sounds and the audios and all the other stuff that's on the website only reinforces the book. When I tell a story of the night that it hit the car and my husband went to get something to eat, and when he came home that night, something had hit our car. We didn't know what it was at the time, but as the story goes, you know, you find out how we found out. But when he left to go get something to eat, I was in the office recording, because we record every night, or we were recording at that time every night. And something came across the audio and said, "Eat!" And then it banged something, it hit something. So when you read the book, when you read the story of what's happening to us, that audio is implanted in there so that you can hear what I hear, or what we heard, or what I heard that night. And you can know what we're going through. It's a way to put you, you know, to understand what's happening to us and what we are hearing is the way that I did it. Because I felt that the story itself would be a good story, in my opinion, if it were just told. But then by adding all the sound, the video, and the audio of what we're hearing and listening to, and when I write the stories, you kind of get... it gives people more evidence as to what's happening. And that's just how I did it, because I didn't know any other way to do it. And I just wanted people to know what we were going through.
So,
all about what we went through.
So a couple of years ago this started. It's fairly recent. Let's give everybody a little bit of background here. You can see some photos of the area in question on the website. Yeah. It appears to be somewhat of a residential area, but there is a lot of forest around it. And I guess the first question is, when did you first move to this location? And I guess that'll also tell us how long it was before this stuff had begun.
Yes. We moved to the location 7 years before we heard it that night. So it was 7 years prior. We bought a house, and the house was the worst house in the neighborhood. It had a lot of damage and was destroyed and stuff like that. So we got it for a very good price. The neighborhood itself is a middle-class neighborhood.
Actually, let me stop you there very quickly, since you mentioned that the house was kind of in disarray at the point. When you bought it, I mean, had the people who sold the house to you mentioned anything? Did it look like they were rushing to get out, or was it just like any other home?
You know, I've talked about this, and the more I've thought about it, because in the beginning, when all this started happening as I was writing the books, I didn't really think about it. I didn't think about the beginning, or I didn't really think that it goes that far back. But now that I've had time to think about it and reflect, when we bought the house, we met the family that lived here. We came here and we met them one time. And we met the husband and the wife, and there were two little children. And they said, they told us that they had foster children. They had several of them, and that would explain most of the damage, that they let the kids do whatever they wanted to, and they gave us this whole, you know, that where we could believe it, because we weren't really thinking of anything else, and we just thought, well, that's very believable.
Was it outside or inside damage?
It's inside and outside. The whole house was damaged. It was completely damaged. It was unbelievably damaged. But we were looking for the room and the space that we needed, so we really didn't, you know, pay that. We just figured we need to work. You know, you're going to have to work. And that's all there is to it. And, you know, and we believed them at the time. But now that I think about it, and now that I've run through the damage repeatedly, you know, I'm thinking there's no way they could have been living in this house because nothing worked. The toilets, the stove, nothing. And so it's hard for me to believe that they were living in it. So I don't know how that, I don't know. I don't know if they left and then all the damage on the, more damage occurred. Maybe they were gone before we took over the house, because we didn't do a walkthrough when we bought it. We bought the house. They asked if they could stay for a while or longer, whatever. We could give them weeks to move, and we said, fine, we didn't care. And then we just came one day, and they were gone, and the house was just destroyed. And I don't know what happened in between that, or if it was more damage or less damage. I have no idea, or if they were occupying it or not occupying it. At this point, I think they weren't, because no one could have. I'm having to look at the evidence of what we got. No one could have lived here. But they told us that they did. So
do you feel that in the 7 years that you lived there before all of this really started to escalate, do you have the impression that whatever was out there moved in when this all began? Or do you think that maybe it was always out there and you guys just didn't pay enough attention to what you were hearing in the woods to notice it?
I think that's the second one, the latter. I don't even want to think about the 7 years that we lived here prior to hearing it, because we were renovating this house day and night. There were many, many, many nights, I get the chills just thinking about it, that I would paint and we would work on the ceiling, because we had to scrape all the popcorn off the ceiling, you know, scrape everything. Everything had to be cleaned and thrown off. And there were countless nights that we would have the doors and windows wide open, in order to air the house out from the fumes of whatever we were doing, whether it be, you know, laying tile or, you know, painting or, you know, doing the drywall. I can't even tell you how many nights we had the doors and windows wide open. I mean, just opened up, because it was better to do it during the night. It was quieter. We figured there was nobody, you know, outside walking around, and we would leave everything open. And we were busy sawing and nailing and banging and sanding and, you know, doing all this stuff. And now that I think about it, you know, I get sick. I get physically ill, because I'm thinking these things had to have been watching us the whole time. They had to have been, because I used to hear things sneaking around. You know, later on, I would hear, you know, noises and mumbles and voices and stuff. But in the beginning, when we were under heavy construction, and when I mean heavy construction, I mean everything going out of the house, everything being replaced. I mean just day and night banging and knocking and replacing and heavy construction and paint and fumes and the smells. And, you know, we had everything open. Everything would be open. And I just get, it makes my stomach turn thinking about that. So I'm thinking that they've always been here. And we just either didn't notice, or, you know, we noticed strange things, but we just didn't think anything of it, or we were so busy. You know, you're so busy when you're trying to make a house livable. You're just working all the time. That was within the first few years. And then after that, strange things started happening, like you said. One year, our trash cans went missing, all three of them. And all these things started happening. And still, we didn't put two and two together. We didn't think. No one thinks that. No one. We're in a neighborhood. And I know that you say it looks pretty isolated. It's not. We're in the middle of a town. We're like 5 minutes from the main road. We are in a housing tract. And I thought the across the street was just a vacant lot, literally a lot. I didn't know that it went so far back and behind the housing tract, you know, the houses and around, and, you know, I didn't know the area at the time. And I just thought it was a neighborhood. There are other neighborhoods on the other side. There are neighborhoods, in, you know, to the right, to the left, a little bit lower. But then you have the parks. You have these two huge parks. And so they also, you know, look like forests. They're forests. But there's houses around the parks. There's houses, you know, there's houses everywhere. It's not like we're... You know, literally, you get off the freeway, which is an interstate, and 5 minutes you'll be at my house. 5 minutes from the interstate. And then the whole city, of course, is built all around that. You know,
this essentially sounds like you're living in my neighborhood, actually.
Yes. I mean, it's not, It's not a farm. It's not out in the middle of anywhere.
But how much wood is there? I mean, when you
There's
thought it was a lot, but I mean, how much did you look on Google Maps or anything and get like a? Is it a huge area of woodland?
Yes. When you look on Google Maps, it's interesting because we never did this until the investigator came out. But when you look on Google Maps, across the street from our house, you see where the plot is, you know, like where they would have built, except it's low-lying land, and there's water in the water department. They have it's drainage from the housing tract. But if you, it's kind of like a little entrance, you know, like you go onto that track, and then it runs, the forest runs. You have houses in like an L shape. You know, there's little houses and neighborhoods, but the forest runs behind them all the way up. Behind the house, it kind of goes along the backyards of them. And then it comes back down to where our house is. And then there's a house that sits right before it goes across the street. And then across the street, there's a huge park. And then there's another house on the right corner of the entrance, another house as it comes wraps around the corner. And then across the street from that house, there's houses that border another large park, and then the park has the forest all behind it. So you've got these two giant parks, and they're massive. And then you've got the forest in the, across the street from our house, which goes up and behind all the houses in the housing development. It goes all the way up and behind them, which is massive. And then across from the park, it goes further. You know, you see pathways, and it goes into further forest. And then as it goes down south, it runs into big, big forests. It just keeps going. Well,
so essentially when this investigator looked on Google Maps, he was not at all surprised that this was happening.
No, he was not at all surprised. No. He knew the area, and he knew where there were other places where they had investigated them or where they were at. And he actually thought that this one, that we had one Bigfoot, and that it was part of a certain clan that he had been investigating that was southeast, I want to say. But I'm not very good with maps, but I would say southeast of here. And there's a cemetery, supposedly, which he showed us on the map. And he said even as kids, you know, everybody in this area knew that you never go in that cemetery at night. He said, because you will get run out. That is their cemetery. And if you go in there, don't ever go in there at night. That it has been that way forever. And if you were a local that grew up in the area, you would have known that. We are not, so of course we didn't know. But it's further southeast of here. And then he pointed out other areas. And he figured that this Bigfoot that was in this area was coming up the creek, because there's a creek that runs in the forest and runs all the way down fresh water. And he figured it was coming up the creek, going through these big forests and coming through here, and then coming up into this area, because he said their territories are very large, and they have wide ranges that they travel. And he said it's nothing for them to travel. You know, 10 miles is nothing for them one day. He said they just come right up there and look around, and, you know, they have territories. And he said that they've mapped out for themselves or whatever, and they will check their territories. They're very territorial. And so, no, it was not a surprise to him at all. He just figured, you know, because of the path it would take. You know, he looked at the map, and it's the path. It's like, yeah, this path, this makes sense. Here, 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 here. You know, we've got him here, 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 here. And, you know, it's not a stretch.
So when you first went to investigate with the pistol, and you went out there, you're looking for whatever it was, how long was it from that day before you figured out what it was? And what occurred where you suddenly realized, this is a Bigfoot?
Yes. First of all, I didn't go up there because my husband did.
So you stayed in the house? He just went out by himself?
Next to me, but I don't really, you know. But no. My husband, when we went out there and investigated that night, when we heard it howling, the next day, that night and the next day, I was on the internet. And I was listening to every single howl recorded. And I kept listening to every howl of every animal I could think of. Now, when you type in screams and howls on the internet, you get a lot of stuff.
Some
of
oh, yeah.
weird. Some of it pretty weird. And I saw Bigfoot howls and, you know, that comes up. But I ignored it because, you know, who's going to, why would you think that, you know? It's impossible. You don't live in the, you know, in mountains or in Sierra, wherever. So I'm thinking that can't be it. So I skipped all those, and I listened to every other animal. And I even listened to animals in Africa that were howling, which is kind of strange.
You never know what someone might have for a pet.
Yeah, an exotic beast or something.
Sure.
So I was listening to everything. And I didn't think to do that. So my son came in later on that evening, and or later in the afternoon, and he said, look, he said, let me do it for a while. Let me look it up. Because I was exhausted. I was tired and distressed because I hadn't slept really. So I sat on the couch while he started to play them. And he would say, listen to this one. And he would play it on the speakers. And I would hear it. And I'd say, no. And then he'd play another one. I'd say, no. He'd play another one. I'd say, no. And I'd say, I already listened to that one, you know. We're playing the same ones. And he would listen to. And then he said, he started going through ones that I hadn't heard. And I kept telling him, no, that's not it. No, that's not it. And finally, he came to one. And it was an Ohio 1994 recording of a Bigfoot in Ohio. That's what the recording was. And he played it. And I said, God, that's it. I jumped up. I was so excited. I ran over to him. I was going to give him a big kiss. Good Lord, you found it. You know, what a relief. What animal is he? You know, so we know. And then he told me, he said, it's a Bigfoot recording. And I said, are you kidding me? You got to be kidding me. It can't be. You know, and I looked at it, and sure enough, it said Ohio and Bigfoot. And I thought, this can't be true. This can't be happening. It can't be that. But the one we heard was louder and clearer, but it was exactly the same tone, same howl. So we called my husband in, and he came in, and he listened to it. And he said, yeah, that's it. He didn't know what it was. He just came in, and we played it for him. I was in shock. I couldn't say anything, but my son played it, and he played it twice for him, and he heard it. And he said, yeah, that's it. That's what we heard. He said, only thing I heard it was louder and clearer. But that's the sound. He goes, good, what is it? We told him it was a Bigfoot. And he could care less. He was like, okay, all right, fine, because he was busy doing something. It's okay, fine. He left.
Do you get the impression that originally he was just like, he didn't believe you and that's why he was fine with it? Or why did you get that reaction out of him?
The reaction I got from him was he didn't care. It was like, okay, it's a Bigfoot. Who cares?
He didn't care that there was a Sasquatch across from your house.
My husband is retired military. He's been in the military 30 years. He's been with, I don't know how many units. He used to be with the 82nd Airborne. He used to be with Special Forces. He used to be with, I mean, infantry, he was with the CBs, he served all branches of service. He served in all of them, tours. And so for him, he has seen a lot of things and done a lot of things. And when we said it's a Bigfoot howling, he was like, okay, whatever, who cares? Like, he just figures, oh, well, you know, his reaction was not at all like mine. He was not at all in the same frame of mind that I was in. He was like, okay, it's a Bigfoot. You know, wow.
So essentially his impression was, okay, maybe there's a Bigfoot out there, but who cares? It's not going to affect us in any way. It's just an animal out there in the woods that we'll never see because nobody ever sees them.
Yeah, I don't know what he's, I don't know. I would have to ask him. It's just that he wasn't fearful. I'll put it that way. Okay, he was not fearful, whereas I was fearful. I'm terrified. I was fearful and terrified, whereas he was not fearful or terrified. Not that we both know any more about them. It's just that it wasn't fearful to him. That's what I want to say. It was not a something that he would be afraid of or that he would ever, you know, have thought he would be afraid. You understand what I'm saying?
Sure. Now, did you believe in Bigfoot prior to this all occurring, or had you just heard stories and thought, maybe, maybe not, who knows?
No, I have always believed in Bigfoot, always. And I've always been terrified of them, always. And I would never, I didn't want to go camping, I didn't want to do anything. I was always terrified, always. Never, always thought that Bigfoots were in the woods. I won't say paranoid, but I just stayed away from the woods. It just solved the problem. Because I don't think people, You know, I know people say, oh, well, you know, that story, they're lying. I don't think that. I listen to stories. I would hear them and people, you know, on TV or whatever. I believe them. And they say, you know, I saw that thing and it did this and it did that. I actually believed it. I would say, yeah, that person's telling the truth. You know, that happened to them. And so, no, I never thought that they didn't exist. Not ever. And I always thought, well, you know, just stay out of the forest and you won't have any problems. Simple solution.
Now,
I have to go looking for one.
Sure. So when this all began, having a fear of Bigfoot, I mean, was there ever a moment where you just said, listen, I know you don't care, but I care. Let's move.
Yes. No, not in the beginning. In the beginning, like later on that night, I was going crazy. And later on that night, I told him. And I told him how I felt and all that. And he listened very carefully to what I was telling him because I was panicked. And I thought, oh, my God, I can't believe this. It could be one of those things across the street. What are we going to do? You know, we have to tell people. We have to warn people. You know, this is a neighborhood. And he just listened to me very carefully and agreed, you know, said, okay, honey, you know, calm down. It's going to be okay. You know, I can protect you. In other words, I can protect you. It's not, you know, don't worry. But I was worried, and I was really upset. And, yes, we definitely wanted to move. Not right away, though, but right afterwards. And we have since then, since all this has happened, yes.
So you have moved?
No, we're still in the same house.
Oh, I see. Okay, I thought you said you had moved since this occurred.
No. We've had a few offers. We've had one fall through, and we're still struggling. The market is not that great, and, you know.
So essentially, if you would get an offer, you'd be out of there tomorrow, but it's been tough.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. No doubt. We already have four storage facilities full of our stuff. Our house is almost down to, you know, bare bones, what I consider bare bones, and we are ready to go at a moment's notice, yes.
Now, this is going to seem like a weird question, but there are, I can't remember the story I read. I don't know if there are places where you're required to disclose if you've had, for example, hauntings in your house, or maybe it was that houses that are allegedly haunted are doing better in the market because of people that want to go live with ghosts. There was some story like this that I read. I mean, when you are in your attempts to sell this house, I mean, have you been forthcoming with potential buyers about what's going on? Do you keep this a secret? Are there any laws that state you must disclose what's going on in the woods? Or I don't know how it works where you're at.
Okay. Legally, we don't have to disclose anything. Because legally, we're not responsible for what they do. You know what I mean?
It's not sure.
Like we can't control what things are doing. So legally, we are not responsible to disclose. In our few offers that we've had selling it through the regular market or with the regular people, no, we do not tell them. We do not disclose it at all. We would never sell the house if we did that. I would hope, and my hope is, that someone that has read the books and knows about them would want to purchase the house.
Sure.
Because for me, that would be really, you know, the best case scenario. In my opinion. Now, because we know of them, and they know we know they're there, because we've seen them and we've gone through all this, they bother us, okay? They have bothered us. But we have many neighbors in the neighborhood whom have lived here for years, and we lived here for several years, and until we started going in the forest and messing with them, chasing them through the woods, you know, all this stuff that's happened, they pretty much left us alone other than just coming around, doing little things here and there. If you don't know of them and you go about your everyday life, I don't think that you're in that much danger. You know what I mean? I don't think that you're in extreme danger like we are. I think
so essentially you've instigated it, whether you meant to or not.
Yeah, exactly. You got it. You have hit it right on the head. You got it. We have, what we did with investigating it, going out in the forest, putting the bait, doing the things that we did, and that's what I try to warn people, don't do what we did. But what we did absolutely instigated it and absolutely put us in danger. And I don't think that the next family that moves in here would have that problem if they just left them alone and didn't know about them. We could have been here. We could have lived here our whole lives without realizing, you know what I mean, without knowing. And I think we would have been okay, like some of our neighbors that have been here 25-plus years or 20 years. Or maybe they just have a different attitude about them. I know a lot of people do. I know the investigator did. You know, it has a different attitude. You know, some people like them. Some people feed them. Some people, you know, there's different attitudes. And I just think ours just was not that attitude at all.
So to clarify, you have neighbors that are aware that something is going on in the woods, but they just let it be.
Well, the neighbor where they had the incident one night, the one that lives to the right of us, yes, they're absolutely aware. And they have a different attitude. They figure, oh, I'll just let them be and, you know, feed them and their animals and, you know, blah. Yes, they have a different attitude. The other neighbors, I don't know if they know or not. I only know that they know, and I only know the neighbor next to the forest knows because I told them, because their children were playing in the forest, and I didn't want them in the forest anymore because of the dog man beat, but or the Bigfoot, but whatever. But those two neighbors are aware. The neighbor that they went into the forest the night before Thanksgiving, when they came down the tree at them, they're aware. And they also talked to the investigator. You know, they are part of it. They would come out here and talk to him and stuff like that and go in the forest. But their attitude is leave them alone, you know, just leave them alone and, you know, whatever. And they'll live their lives, you live yours, you know. They're not fearful. Some people aren't. Some people aren't fearful of it. I, on the other hand, am terrified to death. And because of what we did, we put ourselves in danger. You know, I think the moral of the story is, you know that they're there, be aware, but leave them alone. You know, don't, they're dangerous. I don't know if they, you know what, I don't know. I'm not an expert on them, so I don't really know. All I know is that we were like everybody else out there who finds out there's a Bigfoot and who thinks that the world's looking for them. And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, people don't know that they're real. And, you know, maybe we can, you know, find this Bigfoot and maybe they could capture it and take it away and tell people, yes, they're real, you know, proof. I'm thinking proof. You know, Bigfoot's here, proof. And it was all wrong. It's all wrong. It's all wrong. They already know they exist. They already have proof. They already have what they want. Okay? As far as proof goes, as far as that they exist and all that. They don't want that. They want something different. And I was under the impression that, you know, I don't know.
So what is the best sighting that you personally have had? You've got a lot of photographs up on the website and videos and such. I mean, I guess maybe tell us about the sighting that you had that most convinced you that this isn't a bear, this isn't whatever, this is without a doubt a Bigfoot.
Yeah, it was, the investigator, when he came to our home, he told us the most common type in the area. He described it as human-looking, you know, with a human face, big, you know, like the one you would see on Henry and the Hendersons or on the certain shows that, you know, you see on television.
Sure.
So that's what I have in my mind is what a Bigfoot looks like. That's my image of a Bigfoot, which I know probably most of your listeners have a certain image of what a Bigfoot looks like. Okay, so I'm thinking that. The night that the neighbors chased it, they came back about an hour later. I could hear them because we have microphones, and I could hear them on the microphone. And I'm thinking, wow, this is strange because this is aggressive behavior. Because the neighbors, the investigator, my husband, and my son had just chased them through the forest. Okay? They had just chased them out of the forest. And then an hour later, they returned. And I could hear them on the microphone, you know, over the image. So I had been, up until this point, I had been using a night vision scope. I have been scoping the forest every night for weeks, going up and down the stairs, up and down the stairs, looking at the forest, looking at the forest, because I didn't know how to use a night vision scope, so I don't know how to adjust, you know, it has two focuses on it, and I had to learn how to do that, and I had to learn the forest at night, know what the trees look like and what everything looks like, because I'm not a hunter and I don't do this for a living. I'm a housewife, but I was determined to see them because I was deathly afraid and, you know, didn't want them anywhere near their house. And this was I won't want to say the word obsessed, but pretty close. And so I kept going up and down the stairs and looking at the forest. Well, that night, I heard them come back, and I knew they were here, and I went upstairs, and I said, I'm going to find them, because the neighbors told me where it came out of that tree at. They said, this is where it came down the tree. It was to the left of the entrance of the forest path. So I knew where to look, and the forest is pretty wide. You know, it's pretty, you know, goes around the corner, and it's pretty vast, you know, as far as looking through a scope. Excuse me. And so unless you know what area to look at, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack, really, especially when you don't know what to look for and, you know, everything's moving. And so I go up there, and I am watching the forest. And my husband is getting late. The hours are passing. And he's like, aren't you going to, you know, be done? And cause I'm in our bedroom looking out the window. And he says, well, I'll take the dogs. And he goes into the spare room to sleep. He says, I'll just take the dogs and go. And if you need me, let me know. So I'm watching him. I'm watching the forest, and all of a sudden I see it. I'm looking in the thicket where the neighbors said they saw one, and I see it looks like a dark hole. It looks like the brush is pushed open, you know, like you could see the pattern of the tree. And I'm looking at the pattern of the trees, and in the middle of the thicket, which is tall trees, it looks like there's a void of any pattern, you know, like a hole. I want to say a hole. But the scope sees in shades of green, so I have different shades that I'm looking at. But it looks like it's a hole. And inside this hole, I see eyes. You know, I could see eyes peeking out of that hole. I would get glimpses of them, you know, like the flashes. And it's right on the front of the street. We have our street. And across our street, you have a easement. It's 10 feet. And then you have the forest, and it starts just like a line, like a straight line, where the trees are just right lined up. And I'm watching this, and it's swaying back and forth in the hole. I can see it moving back and forth. It seems to be swaying. And also, it starts to rock, and it's rocking back and forth. And it looks about 8 feet up in the tree line, you know, anywhere between 7 to 8 feet. I can't really tell, but I'm just estimating. And I'm watching it. And at first, I thought, well, you know, maybe it's an owl. It has big eyes, because the eyes were big and round. And I thought, wow, it looks like an owl. Maybe there's an owl in that tree, you know. Maybe they sit at that level. I don't know, you know. I don't know if owls sit at what height. I don't know anything about owls. And I'm watching it, and it leaned out a little bit further. And when it did, I noticed it was a head, and I saw a face. And it's looking flat on me, you know, because I'm looking directly to the left of me. Yeah, to the left of the forest path. So it's on the left. And I see the face. I see a face. It looks like a face. I see eyes, and I see what looks like a mouth. And then I see something attached to it, like a neck, or, you know, it's attached. It wasn't an owl. I'm thinking, that's not an owl. Oh, my God. And then it dawns on me, that's not an owl. Whatever it is, it's moving in that hole, and it's leaning back and forth. It has big eyes, and it's speaking. And I'm watching it, and then I see another movement, and on the side of the thicket, where it looks like something's coming down from the side of it. And I noticed that it looked like it was sliding down, like it was leaving the thicket, and there was a lower patch of a thicket line, like right to the right of it. And it looked like it was sliding down to go behind the other thicket, which was a lower one. And it was crawling. And it looked like it was crawling on the ground, like low crawling, you know, like really crawling, because it didn't look elevated. It wasn't puffed. It was just like moving back and forth and crawling. And it was huge. I mean, huge. The object was massive. It was like a back on it, and it was massive. And I'm watching this thing just crawling back and forth and back and forth. And it's moving along the bottom of the thicket. And I thought, oh, my God, there's another one. And then I thought I lost it because it's getting further away to my left, you know, and I'm looking through the scope, so it's getting further distance. And there's another patch of trees and more forest, and it goes further back. And I thought, wow, where did it go? Where did it go? And I can't find it. I thought I lost it. All of a sudden, I look further back in the forest, and I see what looked like a bush. It looked like a bush to me because it had rough edges, and it was moving, and it was going back further in the forest. And I thought, that's not a bush. It's moving. Oh, my God, it was huge. I couldn't see the shape in the head and the shoulders because it was underneath the tree branches. And I couldn't see the bottom because of the thickets, you know, the ground. Can't really see the feet or anything. I just saw a back, a huge, massive back. And it was going further back in the forest, and it was moving. And it was getting further, further away. And I thought, oh, my God, that's it. It stood up, and it's walking further back. And then once I spotted that one and I started to scope around, you know, go in a circle, go around, I noticed a lot more of them. And I nearly dropped a skull. I almost passed out and died right down the spot because there was more of them. And they were in the trees and they were on the side of the trees and they were, and I thought, oh, Jesus Christ, what are we dealing with? You know, you don't even know what you're. At that point, your mind is blown. You don't even know what you're dealing with.
Are we talking a dozen?
I don't know because I didn't count them, but because I could see some glimpses and some shapes, you know what I mean? But I would say at least several. And I couldn't watch anymore at that point because I wasn't breathing. I mean, I had all kinds of problems going on. My stomach locked. I couldn't breathe. I mean, all these things are going on. I can't believe what I'm seeing. We thought there was only one, and maybe the investigator thought maybe two, and now I'm seeing more than that, and you know. Well, then I decided to, after I rested, got my composure, tried to breathe, got some oxygen, you know, all that stuff, I had to look at it again, because it's like watching a car accident over and over. You know what I mean? You can't believe what you see, so you've got to see it again. You've got to make sure that's what you saw. You're like, I can't believe I'm watching this. So therefore, I have to watch it again. You know, your mind is saying that, but your body is failing quickly. I mean, you are failing. Your body's shutting down. Your breathing, your stomach, your everything's shutting down. But your brain is saying, you know, you've got to see it again because you have to make sure this is what you're looking at. So I looked again, and I'm watching them. And now that I know what color they are, because they are a certain shade in the forest, now I know the shade of color. So now my mind and my brain automatically recognizes the shade. So I'm scanning that side of the forest, and it's like boom, 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 boom. You automatically see the color difference. And I watched one up in a tree. I decided to focus on a little one in a tree because he was sideways. He was yelling from the, it looked like he was hollering from the treetop, walking back and forth, you know, going back and forth. And I could see a side profile. Whereas the other ones, I only saw the face of the one. But I saw a straight-on face, so I couldn't tell. You know, I know it was a face, but I couldn't tell how the structure was. And so I looked at a little one, and I started to watch that one. And that's when I got a side profile. And they didn't look nothing like what he told me. Nothing. Nothing like I'd ever seen in my life. Nothing like that you would have seen on television or on the, you know, networks, whatever. I don't care. That thing was not human-looking. They did not look like that. They looked like animals. They had snouts. It had, thick brow, recessed eyes. The nose went to the end of it, to the snout. It had a snout on it. It had ears on the side of its head. I mean, they were so different than what I was expecting to see that the fear that went through my body was like, oh, my God, what are we dealing with? This is something different. This isn't what he told us, what we were under the impression they looked like. And that was unbelievable, that type of fear. And I just lost it then. Then I just collapsed. Like, there was nothing I could do. I mean, I was sick. I just didn't know what was happening. It was like, what is going on? Why do they look so different? Why do they look like this and not like that?
So this was a dog man.
No, this was a Bigfoot. This one was a Bigfoot, but it was a different type, and I didn't know that. But this one was not a dog man. The dog men have ears on the top of their head.
Ah.
Okay? They have ears that go straight up. They are something different. But you have to think, I'm a person who has never seen one. I don't know. Only thing I know is what I watch on television or what I, you know, I don't know about these things. So when I see this, I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is an anomaly. I don't know what these things are. And as time goes by, I watch them more. I start watching them night after night after night after night. Anytime I hear that they're there, I go up there and I watch them and I watch them and I watch them. And they do, you know, different things. And I write about some of the things that they do in the book and some of the things that I see. But I don't write about everything that I see because some of it's really, really, really bad and I don't want to write about that. But I did talk to the investigator about something.
Bad?
Yeah, really bad. And I just don't want to, you know, I didn't want to write about it. Yeah, really disturbing. And I just didn't want to write about it.
Huh.
And so, but I did talk to the investigator about some of the things and, of course, he confirmed everything I was seeing. But, and then he tells us, I describe to him about what they look like. And I describe to him what they are, and I describe to him everything about them. And he says, look, those are a type 2 Bigfoot or some other type. And he says there are 4 types of Bigfoots, and that is this type. That's the kind you have. He said they're more animal-like, and they're aggressive, and they're this, and they're that. And we don't like messing with them. Because they are aggressive, and they are the animal kind. And he keeps asking me the whole time if I have seen any of the red ones, you know, the red furred ones, the big red type, the type that he's looking for. He's looking for the ones that are the red human-looking ones, you know, the different type. And I keep telling him, no, I don't see that at all. All I see are the black type, this type. That's it. I don't see the other one. And I got to see one during the day, the Bigfoot, very detailed. And I describe him in the book, and he is the black. They are black. They're the black one. They are not the other kind. Now, the dog man is something different, and that I was watching as well. They were mostly during the day, and I would see them in the forest during the day, and sometimes I saw them at night. They were with the other kind. But they have ears, and they look, their body types are different. And I kept thinking, maybe they're just little ones, and they haven't grown or remorphosed into the bigger ones. You know, it's just shape. And they haven't changed or something. I mean, I don't know. Don't know what they are. And then one night, I saw what I think he was referring to, which was the big red ones, when he put a gaming camera in the forest. Oh, God, this night was the worst. Or one of the worst, where he put a gaming camera in the forest. Because I kept telling him where they were. I kept saying, I see them. They're right here. Every night they're here, or every other night they're here. And so he finally puts a camera in the forest. He didn't want to do that because he said they rip the cameras from the trees and they break them. And I guess the investigators have to buy their own cameras. You know, it's his property. And he's like, I don't like replacing these cameras, you know. And I can understand that. Anybody could. And I bought a few cameras, and believe me, it's not cheap. And he didn't want to do it, but he finally decided to put a gaming camera in the forest. Although he put it on the pathway further down and not the entrance where they were all the time. So that's a whole other story, but he put that camera in that forest. And that night, it was so quiet, you could hear a pin drop. It was quiet. And he put bait, he put liver in the tree. You know, big baited thing with liver and he did all this, and he put the camera, and he said, look, when you hear the limb snap, when they snap that limb holding that bait, he said, just record, just continue recording. And then tomorrow I'll come back and check the bait and check the camera. He said, but when you hear the snapping, just record it. So we were both, you know, in the office. My husband, we were taking turns sleeping because getting sleep around here, like having a newborn baby, or I mean, I can't get any sleep. And it was very quiet, and it was around 10:30 at night. And my husband was sleeping on the couch, and the dogs were hearing it. It was just, there was no sound. And I kept thinking, wow, you know, this is really nice. It's really quiet. We don't hear anything. So I decided to go upstairs and check the forest with the scope. I said, you know what, I'm just going to take the scope, I'm going to leave the room, I'm going to go upstairs, I'm going to check the forest, and then, you know, not see anything, because we didn't hear anything, there's nothing out there, come back downstairs, and then, you know, let my husband sleep a little longer, because he was going to take the second shift. You know, I was going to get some sleep, and then he would wake up, and, you know, reverse. And I sneak out of the room, out of the office, and I go upstairs, because I don't want the dogs to follow me, because if they follow you, sometimes they're rambunctious, and they, you know. I go up there, and I sneak in the bedroom, and I get the scope, and I'm ready to scope the forest to see nothing, and I look out the window, and the first thing I see is one of the Bigfoot on the right of the path. And they normally hide behind the bushes. You'll see the bushes. And what you'll see is you'll see, you know, just a little movement. You'll see where the bush just pushes down slightly or where it just moves or where they're, you know, pulling at something. And you'll just see a slight movement. But you won't ever see the whole creature. You might see bits and pieces, you know, like the arm or a little bit of the shoulder or whatever. But they're they like to stay hidden. They don't stick their head out and they don't, you know, look out and all that. Up until this point, that's not what they were doing. You know, this is what I saw through the scope. But this night, I looked out and I could see him. And he was not hiding behind a bush. I could see his, from the waist up, you know, his body, torso, his upper torso. And I could see him standing there at the edge of the forest, and it was on the right side. And he was moving his arms, like doing sign language very rapidly, moving it back and forth and back and forth and just like signing. And I'm watching this. I'm thinking, wow, this is bizarre because I've never seen them do that before. And he has to be doing it for a reason. No animal or no whatever would stand at the edge of a forest moving its arms that rapidly if it didn't have a reason. It's like there has to be a reason for this. So I'm watching this. I'm watching him moving his eye. He looks upset. He looks very upset. And his arms are going and, you know, just like moving them, like signing. And so I look across the path, and I look in the path, and I don't see anything. I look to the other side of the path, and I don't see anything. It's just blank. And I'm thinking, got to be signaling to somebody. Has to be doing all this movement for a reason. So I keep sliding the scope, and I'm looking, and I'm scoping up and around, and I'm scoping to the right of the path, and I could see the left side. You know, I could see, I'm sorry, I get my right and my left mixed up. He was on the left side. If I'm looking out the window, the way I describe it is if I'm looking out the window or if they're looking at me, so it's kind of confusing. But
sure.
But I could see the side that he was on. I could see the trees, the branches, the path. I could see him there, and I could watch it. But on the other side, I couldn't see anything down the path, and I couldn't see the edge of the where the woods stopped and the path began on the other side. And yet I could see the trees past that. And I have scoped this path, I don't know how many times at this point. I have scoped this forest, I don't know how many times. And I could see down the path because the moonlight reflects differently on different parts of the path, or the light. So when you look through the scope, you see different shades. And you could see the outline of the trees, you know, not as it goes further back, it doesn't get as clear, but you can make out the branches, the trees, and you can make out the path floor because of the way the light's hitting it, whether it has moonlight or no moonlight or whatever, you can see it. So not, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but you could see it. You could see the different shades, and you know it's a path, and there it is. And I kept looking on the path, and I couldn't see nothing. I kept thinking, God, I don't see anything. There's no variation of shade color. There's no variation of patches where it looks patchy or where you can see it, you know, branches. I'm thinking there's something wrong. Why can't I see the path? I couldn't see the path. And he kept signaling, and I'm thinking I can't see the path, and I kept signaling. And so I put the scope down, I rested my eyes, and I'm giving my eyes a break, and I look back, and I'm looking, here's the street, here's my front of my house, here's the street, here's the mailbox, here's the Bigfoot, here's the path, it's right there, yet it's not there. And I don't understand why I can't see in the path. So then I decide, well, you know what, I'm going to go to the top. So I go all the way up to the top, to where you could see the treetop, you know, above it. And then I start to come down. I go, okay, now I'm going to come down. Because this is getting to the point where, you know, this is crazy, I can't see the path. So I start to come down, and all of a sudden I see what looks like the shape of a head. And it is in, it's a shape of a head, and it's a real high up in the path, and it looks, the moon with the light behind it. And I think, oh my God, it's a head. You make out the shape, it's a head. And I go a little bit to the right of it, and I see another head. Looks like a head. So then I go down with the scope, go down, and I see two separate arms. I see one arm that looks opposite from the other arm. They're separate. So there's a head, and then another head, and then I go back lower to the middle. There's two separate arms. So then I go across. Okay, go across. Cross, and then I see another arm, and then another arm, and then I go back up another head. Oh, my God. I almost literally died right then and there. There were, oh, just thinking about it makes me sick. There were four Bigfoots, okay, one, two, three, four heads on that pathway, and they were so big. They were so massive. They blocked that entire path. They were huge, huge. I couldn't see. I didn't even look at them another 2 seconds. I dropped that scope, and I ran. I just ran. And I ran downstairs, and I told my husband, I came in the office, and I was frantic. And I woke him up, and I was like, oh, my God, we're in trouble. We were in complete trouble. I thought, we are not going to survive. There is no way that we're going to live tonight. That's it. We're done. They were huge. They made that one on the right, while looking out the window to the right, that one looked like a baby. They were massive.
How big would you estimate if it were just standing up?
Oh, my God.
10 feet?
Oh, no, bigger than that.
12?
Bigger than that.
15?
Oh, God, between 13 to 15 feet.
Wow.
I would have to say that. Between 13 to 15 feet. They were so big. I had never, you can't even imagine something that big. And they were this burly type, you know, like barreled, you know, solid from top to bottom. You know, I only saw to the waist, you know, the arms were the chest and the waist, but barreled. Nothing thin, nothing scrawny, nothing about that. They were just, they were massive, massive. And they made that. The other one, I would have to say, the reason why I say that is because the other one, I would have to say, was at least 7 to 8 feet, you know, average, 7, 6, 7, 8 feet, the one that was standing, the one that was doing the sign language. And they dwarfed that one. They made that one look like a baby. So that's why I have to say they were massive. They were massive. And I went into immediate shock. That very second I went into shock. I just went into shock.
Now, amazingly, we're actually running low on time. This is a fine cliffhanger for another episode that I think we need to do down the road. Now,
okay. Before
we start plugging the book and everything like that, I people would be very upset if I didn't play a little bit of this here.
Okay.
As noted, we've got a number of different sounds that are available up on your website, which is 100bigfootnights.com. So let me play this right here. This is a scream that was recorded November 3rd, 2012 at about 10:09 p.m. Here we go. So there you go, right outside your home.
Yeah, I think that was the Bigfoots killing the raccoons. That's what I think.
Oh.
I don't know about that one. Yeah, those are the types of horrible screams that you hear. I don't know. We hear a lot of weird things, but that's one of the screams that we hear.
Yeah, you mentioned hearing weird things. I really want to talk about this the next time you come on. There's so much. Trust me, everybody. We didn't even get started here. We didn't really talk at all about the Dogmen. There's been paranormal activity there. You've got an audio clip here at 100bigfootnights.com that you have classified as working, and it does in fact sound like some people working on metal or something. So
yeah.
That's bizarre that would be happening in the woods outside your house all night long. This was from November 12, 2012. So I'm going to get with you here soon, and hopefully we can do a part two on this. But before we go, I want to give you a chance to plug the website, the books, which are available on Amazon.com, 100 Bigfoot Nights. The floor is yours. Get the word out.
Okay. Well, on our website, or on the website, I have 17 videos of strange, bizarre things. And I counted them the other day. There is 75 audio recording, and each one of the recordings goes to, you know, part of the story. And I've also added, I'm adding additional sounds and recordings every day. I have over 200 videos that I have not had analyzed or gone through all of them. I have some people looking at some, and I have months more of audio recordings to go through that right now it's difficult because hard for me to hear any more creeping sounds right now. But if you go to the website, just listen to them and just watch and just make up your own mind. You know, listen to the sounds. You're going to hear some of the creepiest things you have never heard in your life. And I can't believe I even recorded these. And the books just tell you. The books are written to answer the question because people want to know how it started, what happened, and, you know, all that. So once you listen to the audios and watch the videos, the books answer all your questions. And if you have any questions left, you can always post them, and I'll answer as much as I can. But that's basically what it's about. And, you know, I just want people to know. They're real. It's true. And you won't believe the things they do or what they're capable of.
And keep in mind, Christine is not even writing about all of it. There is some stuff that is too bad to even write about in the books.
Yeah, I don't want to put that in a book.
Maybe someday we'll get that one out of there.
Well, because, you know, people want to read the book. They want information, you know, to learn something. And just writing horrible things, you know. I know I write some pretty hair-raising things, and there's scary things, and there's, you know, actually what's happening. But to write visually, you know, everything that they do or some things that I've seen, people would have nightmares. You're going to have nightmares anyway when you read the book, you know. But it's an images that I don't like to leave. You know things happen, but you don't want to spell it out.
Yeah. So the website, everybody, is 100bigfootnights.com, and that's 100bigfootnights.com. The book is going by the same title, 100 Bigfoot Nights, A Chilling True Story. It is available on Amazon.com. There is a Kindle edition. I know a lot of you out there read tons of books on Kindle, so head up there. Christine Parker is the name of the author. She is, of course, our guest today here on the program. And Christine, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today, and I'm wishing you here the best of luck as you attempt to sell the house and get out of there. But of course, best of luck with the books and everything else as well, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Thank you, Brian. If you know anyone who wants a house, let me know.
That's right. 100 Bigfoot Nights is where you're going to go if you want to buy a house.
Thank you, Brian.
And of course, we'll be back in just a moment with more After Dark Radio here on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network. And we are back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here. After Dark Radio and the Dark Matter Radio Network. We were just joined by Christine Parker talking 100 Bigfoot Nights. That is the website address, 100bigfootnights.com. And if you head up there, you can hear some more of the audio that we did not play on the program tonight. Just barely scratched the surface of things that I wanted to ask her about. Didn't even get into the dog men, really. as well as everything else going on involving the paranormal. Very interesting. I, earlier in the show, was talking about the Ouachita Project. The North American Wood Ape Conservancy has done a 4-year study looking at what they believe is a wood ape, some sort of ape here in America that is responsible for Sasquatch sightings. And I didn't read this until after I had done the interview with Christine. And Christine has got a very interesting story, and I'm sure that some of you listening to this right now are skeptical of it, but I thought it was very interesting that some of the things that she talked about in the interview and some of the things that are mentioned up on her website, if you read the, and this is, it's available, by the way, if you go to the woodape.org website, this report is 229 pages long. 229 pages long. And they've got all sorts of information in there. And I want to read a little bit from the conclusion. But the point of this is, it was very interesting reading some of this and making some comparisons between what they reported and what Christine reported. The rock throwing, the alleged seemingly paranormal activity, the sounds of metalworking, it seems. All of these things were reported by the North American Wood Ape Conservancy. And I didn't read about this until after I had interviewed Christine Parker on the show. So very fascinating. And in a moment, I'm going to read from the conclusion of the 229-page study that the North American Wood Ape Conservancy has recently published. But first, let's take a phone call. You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Felix. I'm calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
What's up, Felix?
Good. Hey, you were talking about the topic reference to numbers.
Yes.
Yes, and I'm calling about that topic. I actually found that very interesting. 26 is my number.
And you see
and
it everywhere.
Always follow me. I see it. It's actually my last of my social, last two of my son's social. It's it falls into different places. When I play my lottery tickets, I play the scratchers 26. I pretty much win on them most of the time. It just pops up in general places. I'm in law enforcement. 26 pops up all the time on different things and situations. I just find, and then one day I researched 26 on the internet, and it was actually really a lot to it, what 26 stands for.
And what did you,
and
what did you discover?
My birthday's on the 26th, October.
What did you discover when you went online?
It was just talking about the difference of the Bible scripture. It more stayed toward the Bible scripture than it did with, we're trying to figure out where why these numbers come apart, come to you.
So when you mentioned that you often play the lottery with this and you win, I would presume that 26 being all over your life to you is brought good luck.
It brings good luck. Like 13th, today's Friday the 13th. I won $50 on a scratcher today.
Which, by the way, is half of 26.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say.
How about that?
So, I mean, just the numbers. I mean, I like to find out more why these numbers follow you or why they stick with you. As a matter of fact, one of my tattoos on it's a Bible quote that I have is 426 that I stick with.
You know, it's interesting because some people, when they talk about like the 1111 phenomenon, to them it's not good. It is a number that follows them, and it is not a positive thing. But for you, 26 has been good your whole life.
Oh, my sons laugh because they tell me that's a day you're gonna die on. I just laugh at the 26
well,
because it always pops up. I can call the 26. I mean, I look at the time. It's 26. It's 4:26, 2:26, whatever the time is. There's a point in my life I was waking up at 3:26 every morning.
Wow.
At 6 o'clock.
That's crazy.
So, I don't know what 26. I really don't know what 26 is. Maybe one of your listeners can explain more where 26 comes from.
Well, hey, if anybody knows, I want to thank you very much for the call. If anybody has any information on 26, let me know, and we should probably get somebody on. We had someone on talking 1111 a while ago and in numbers and such, and maybe I need to get another guest, and we'll ask about 26 and have other people call and write and email in with their number stories. sometime here in the future. We got a very limited amount of time left, so I just want to read this to follow up here on everything we've been talking about here tonight. This is portions of the conclusion from the Oachita Project, the North American Wood Ape Conservancy. 4 years they studied this, and they note that, essentially, I'll cut to the chase here. They had put out cameras, apparently, and for years, their cameras had picked up nothing. And so most of the individuals involved went into this, it says here, generally ambivalent regarding the possibility that any sort of hard contact with an undescribed species of North American ape would result from the new research approach. After 5 years of no photo documentation of a novel species with all of their cameras. So they went in and they did all of their investigations, 11,000 hours, I believed it was. And it says, by the end of the fourth year, there was no longer any debate within the NAWAC regarding the possibility of an unlisted species in the Oachita Mountain ecoregion. Rather, discussions revolved around how to best obtain independently verifiable evidence in the form of a type specimen, that being a body, so that formal description can take place and the real work of conservation, preservation, and behavioral study can begin. They believe that this proposed ape species, they have a number of notes here. Like the known great apes, it sometimes hurls rocks and intruders into its habitat. It is mostly bipedal, which is, of course, unlike the great apes, has a tendency to break branches and push over trees as part of its threat display arsenal, often manifests a fetid odor. Members of the troop community communicate via a cryptic code of loud knocks on trees and other surfaces. They appear at ease, traversing heavily wooded, rocky, mountainous, often treacherous regions. It is possessed of an extremely powerful sense of curiosity, appears to use distraction tactics, a variety of vocalizations, including those resembling traditional ape vocalizations, howls, pan hoots, mimicry, and what has been described as a sort of faux speech, most of the time not a solitary animal. Individuals vary in color, gray, black, brown, blonde, or honey, reddish brown, and it seems to cognitively avoid camera traps. If you would like to read this entire 229-page study, you can head up to woodape.org and you will find a link to this PDF, their monograph, the Oachita Project monograph. Read this. I'm probably going to spend the rest of the week reading it, and we'll probably talk more about it on next week's program. If possible, I'll see if I can get a guest on to talk specifically about this topic. It's very, very interesting, especially when you consider what we talked about tonight with our guest, Christine Parker. So I do recommend you head up there and check that out. Also like to mention that I didn't have time to talk about it here today, but more and more coming out about the May 5th reveal of the Roswell slides. If you get a chance, Google Roswell slides and mummies, as well as a different perspective. You'll be taken to Kevin Randall's blog, and he has got a note here from Tony Bregaglia about allegations that all you're going to see on these slides are mummies. And what he has done here is explain why, in his belief, what is shown in these slides, not mummies. Now, we're going to find out for sure on May 5th what exactly is in these slides. But he's got a lot of very, very interesting comments that he has made about whatever it is in these slides and why he believes that, in fact, this is not just a display of a mummy, photographs taken in the late 40s that today are being put on display. And the claim, of course, is that they are alien beings. So head up to Kevin Randall's blog. Just Google the Roswell slides and mummies, a different perspective, and you will be taken here and you can check this out. One last quick thing before we start getting into the plugs here, and that is that No real update yet on Art Bell and his proposed return in July. Hopefully, we'll have some news next week. I'm hoping that when we have news, all of you may get the scoop first, because hopefully we will have an after show with Keith Rowland when everything is signed, sealed, and delivered if that day comes. So things are ongoing, but nothing confirmed that we can talk about here today on the program. So, of course, best wishes that all gets worked out. And finally here from Cortana, she says, I wouldn't be surprised if you found Bigfoot in Bothell. Even though there are homes, the forest is very dense. And she notes she is in the 425 as well. Another Bothellite here, Empress Cortana. And in fact, someday I'll try and find him again. I don't necessarily think it was Bigfoot, but there was one night where there was a really, really, really weird noise coming out of the woods. And I went outside and I recorded it. And I played it on the show a while ago. And I asked everybody listening, if you know what this is, let me know. And nobody came forward with an explanation as to what this weird noise coming out of the woods was. So maybe I'll play that next week on the show, if I can dig that up. We're out of time, everybody. I want to thank you all for listening, obviously. Check out the websites. ArtBell.com is the place to go, obviously. The host site of the Dark Matter Radio Network. All sorts of great shows on the Dark Matter Radio Network. So head up and check those out. Our website, the After Dark Radio website, is up at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Easy. AfterDarkRadioShow.com. If you missed any portion of this show, it's going to be available for download at AfterDarkRadioShow.com up here in just a moment. So head up there and grab that. I want to thank, of course, all of you for listening. Check out the Facebook page, Facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. Like the page. We're heading towards 3,000. I'd love to hit it. I'm on Twitter at Brian Alvarez. And, of course, a huge thank you to our illustrious webmaster, Keith Rowland. Art Bell, as always, and all of you, the listeners. Very much appreciate it. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. Had a great time tonight. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week, After Dark Radio, here on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network.